Welcome back to Fantastic Voyage, the David Bowie podcast.
We are the, we're the definitive one.
Give me a hard time about that, deservedly, I think. I'm Jesse.
I'm John, by the way. We are the only one that I think has talked about the Linguini incident, though, or at least the only one that's done a fully fledged episode on it, right? Like,
I think so. Yeah, I still have yet to listen to another David Bowie podcast, which I will
do. Of course, yeah, there's no other ones.
There's no other ones. We're the Tin Machine podcast, the Linguini incident podcast.
Starring David Bowie of Tin Machine.
Right. Fresh off his Sound and Vision tour, he went straight into making this movie, The Linguini Incident, 1991. American film, directed by Richard Shepard. Have you heard of Richard Shepard before this?
No.
No, I did some Wikipedia-ing and saw a lot of projects that he's worked on. Nothing crazy that stuck out, but he worked on a lot of things. He did a lot of TV episodes. He actually won an Emmy for a show I've heard of, Ugly Betty, the pilot of it. He wrote the pilot and won an Emmy for it, which is a big deal. Yeah, this is his second film, so relatively new director. Filmed in late 1990, as we said, released in America in May of 92. Oh, I said that backwards. Released in Europe in October of 91, and didn't reach America until 92 in May. So it's always weird, those delayed releases, where something's released on one side of the pond, and then, like, it just took almost...
Especially for the 90s. Like, it made more sense, like, in the 60s or something, back when, like, we had no real way of communicating or accessing stuff from cross-continent. But it's like, this is the 90s now.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had the World Wide Web and all this, so...
Email it to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, word would travel fast, like albums, bootlegs of movies and music and stuff like that would be a lot easier to, like... If somebody was really interested in seeing this, and they were in the... I don't think there was probably a lot, but let's say there was this big movie buff or Bowie buff that was living in the States. I'm sure he probably could have got his hands on this sometime before May or sometime before its DVD release. Or no, I guess not DVD, VHS release.
VHS release.
It's a VHS movie. Well, I think of DVD as the old thing now, but no, it was...
Right.
DVD was new in like 2005. Remember, that's when all the James Bond movies weren't on VHS anymore. It was Die Another Day or maybe even 02.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe it had to do with scheduling, like, you know, like releasing.
Well, did it premiere at a festival, or was it actually just released?
I didn't read anything about any festivals.
Because sometimes that's what happens. It debuted in Cannes, or is it Cannes or Cannes?
Cannes. Yeah.
It debuts there and then comes out to regular theaters a year later. I don't know.
They could have emailed it over. I emailed this to you.
You did? Well, I was not supposed to watch this movie. The universe just did not want me to see it. Like, I couldn't. I was, you know, finding torrents, and they were all in different languages. And then the other one that I found that was actually in English was like a video file that all my softwares wouldn't support. And I was just like, how am I going to watch this thing? Call all the pawn shops. Do you have this VHS by any chance?
Yeah. Well, and if you were asking, you may have had to give several names in trying to track it down. It was released as Shag-O-Rama, which... Yeah, so alternate titles when it was finally released to VHS was, Shag-O-Rama, Houdini and Company, which, I mean, both of those, like, really don't make much sense. I mean, they kind of do, but not really. And The Robbery, which maybe is the most fitting title, because the movie's not about pasta.
I was just going to say, I mean, even the title wasn't the most. Maybe we'll get into that if we get to the end of your... You're probably going to do a synopsis or something, right?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
The title, I mean, I was... audibly cackling when I figured out why it was called the Linguini Incident.
Yeah, like, really? They chose that, of all things?
I thought that was actually one of the strokes of brilliance in the movie, was that, because it actually made me laugh.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, speaking of laughing, it's a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
The first, and I guess only real comedy that Bowie had a major role in, anyway. This is his last major role.
Is Gigolo a comedy?
No.
What is it? Was that trying to be?
I don't.
What was that? Was his own genre?
I don't know what Gigolo was. It fell flat. This one, this would be his last feature or his last major role in a film, and I'm going to miss doing these episodes. I always have the most fun doing it. We'll have to do a film podcast when we're done with Bowie.
It's yeah.
My favorite kind to listen to, and evidently my favorite kind to record. Should I get into the synopsis so we can get that out of the way and we can just dive straight in? Spoiler alert. Go watch the movie. It'd probably be better to watch it, and then you'll know what the hell we're talking about. But if not, here's my short little summary.
You might not be able to find it, so this might be the best you'll get.
This might be it. Yeah. So it's set in New York. Very kind of grimy 90s. Like, it kind of feels 80s New York.
Even I got 80s. Yeah. I think it's pretty close. It's very early 90s, right? So basically 80s New York.
So one of our main characters, Lucy, played by Rosanna Arquette. I guess we'll talk about her later. She's a waitress at this restaurant. It's kind of like a supper club type joint. And she's a waitress, but she really wants to be a famous escape artist. She loves Houdini, and she wants to be the next Harry Houdini.
She kind of claimed to have some kind of association to him, right? Or affiliation.
Right.
I think it was a fib.
Yeah. So she wants to buy this Houdini's wife's wedding ring at this pawn shop in New York. So... and she can't afford it. She needs $5,000 or something. So, okay, Lucy needs money. Now enter Monty, played by David Bowie, who also works at this supper club type place. He's a bartender, and he's an Englishman who has recently landed in New York, and he really desperately needs to get a green card. So he's going, well, I got to marry somebody. That's my fastest route to doing it.
Well, that's what we're led to believe, is that he needs to
Well, right. Yeah. We'll get to that. Yeah. So he talks to another coworker, and she says that she knows a way that he could buy a wife, essentially, and get his green card. So now Bowie needs money. So they both need money. What are they going to do? They need money fast. So they decide to rob the place. They're going to rob the restaurant that they work in. And a series of things kind of goes wrong. The robbery doesn't really go wrong. They Lucy's roommate, who's a lingerie designer, they ask her to help. She helps. She has like self-defense lingerie with knives that come out of her bra. And no one's taking her seriously when she holds the place up.
She's a very charming robber.
Right,
They're entertained by it. They like it.
It's far from an Ocean's 11 type heist movie, but they do get the job done. They rob the place, but Lucy goes to buy the ring, and someone else has beat her to it. And Bowie tries to get her to. Oh, she was gonna marry Bowie for helping rob the place. They didn't have enough money. They didn't figure they'd get enough money to do both. So she said, well, I'll marry you if you help me rob, and I get to keep the money. She just, like, forgets her ID and can't get married in time. So what are we going to do? Well, Bowie can't get married. And it turns out that the two club owners have basically just made a bet with him that he could, like, a double or nothing bet. It's either you owe me $2 million or you can marry one of the waitresses. So really, he almost did what he was.
He had a tight deadline. Yeah, you had to get married.
Yeah.
In like a week or something.
Yeah.
So he was trying to get his green card. Yeah, he's a bad gambler.
But he's a very bad gambler.
And it gets even worse.
Yeah. So then he says, well.
Or this, it does, I guess maybe it does.
This struggling escape artist, he then goes, I'll do double or nothing again. If this escape artist can get out, Lucy, then I'm debt-free. And they say, well, if not, it'll be $4 million, or you've got to get plastic surgery to look like me. These menacing dudes.
They're kind of like, what's the names of those two freaks from Diamonds Are Forever?
Oh, totally. Mr. Kid.
And Mr. Wint.
And Mr. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're not very convincing that they're actually going to be able to do anything to him if he doesn't come through. But alas, she does come through. And she escapes in the middle of the restaurant, and that's it. That's the movie. She escapes, and he doesn't have to get plastic surgery to look like one of them. I mean, did you notice who one of them is?
Pulp Fiction, right? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Or are you talking about the guy?
One of the owners. It's the guy from, his name's Buck Henry. He was in The Man Who Fell to Earth. He was his business partner that gets killed in the beginning.
Yeah, I read that, but I didn't recognize it when I was watching.
Much later, yeah.
The one, what's her name? Rosanna
Arquette.
Yeah. She plays, you know, there's that scene in Pulp Fiction where someone's ODing and they get that shot from like the heroin expert. She's a very minor character, but it's his girlfriend or wife or whatever.
Okay.
That's in that house. She plays the girlfriend of that guy that gives the injection that saves the person that's overdosing.
Right.
So she's in a very iconic movie, just a very small role, but she looked familiar to me. She was one where I was like, I know her from somewhere.
Well, and her siblings are all super famous and have their own very famous careers as well. Yeah, so that's kind of it. It's a heist comedy, but it kind of is neither.
Well, and there's also that weird love triangle where she gets...
Yes. Yeah.
Very early in the movie, when Bowie, like, I thought the movie was, like, taking this weird, weird, dark, sinister turn. Like, I thought Bowie was going to be a rapist and this was going to be a dark movie. You know, when, like, he comes home, she's doing something weird. She's doing some kind of weird...
Oh, that's the best scene in the entire movie.
The orange in her mouth or whatever.
And yeah. She's in her apartment. It's really early. She's in her apartment trying to escape. Like, she's practicing her escape tricks, right? And she's got a noose around her neck, and she kicks the chair out from underneath her, and she gets really stuck.
She winds up calling Monty, Bowie's character, Monty, to rescue her, and then he comes over, and he's like he's very persistent. Let's get married, and he's like very nonchalant about it, and she's like, well, no, I don't even know you. I know your name. That's about it. And then he handcuffs
themselves,
both of them, to the bed, and you know, she's her friend comes home, the other, you know, mate, what's her name,
Vivian
again. And you know, it seemed like it was like this creepy movie, like, this guy's a psychopath, like, get these cuffs and get me out. It was like he was gonna be this weird predator. I thought like he was a predator. I was like, holy shit, this movie's gonna be nuts. It gets very, very much tame after that, though, and I think that's kind of the name of the game with this movie, is it's just twists and turns. Like, very unpredictable. You don't really know where it's going to go. You can't really make heads or tails as to what the hell's happening.
Well, yeah, the heist takes place, like, halfway through the movie. And then you're kind of like, okay, well, what's going to happen now? And then it does take a twist. So it turns out who bought the ring, it was Monty, Bowie's character. He was going to use it as the wedding ring.
And that's another good thing, I think, that this movie does do, is that it's got all these little subplots. You got the aspiring lingerie designer, her self-defense bra comes into effect in the heist, the Houdini ring, like all these little like sub storylines, they all kind of emerge and they all kind of get intertwined. And I thought that was kind of it. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on and they all kind of made it somewhat cohesive. Like, it was all brought together in some capacity.
Yeah. It kind of, On its own as a heist movie, or on its own as a comedy, or on its own as a drama, it would fall short as a genre film. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of just comfort viewing. It's
the type of movie when you go to somebody's cabin and they got a VHS collection.
Pop this in.
And well, you're sitting there and you're looking through all the familiar titles. You see the ones with the thick spines. You see the Titanic and Saving Private Ryan. And this is somewhere wedged in there in someone's collection.
The cottage we go to, or your wife's parents.
That's where you watch this movie. You don't watch it, you know, on your first date or something. You know, this isn't a classic movie. It's not, don't think it was supposed to be. I don't even know really what the hell this movie was supposed to be. It's very weird to me that David Bowie's in this movie.
Yeah, and I saw an interview where he was talking about it, and he said this is one of the best scripts he's ever read. How many scripts have you read? Like, it's not that great.
To me, it's weird, that this, like, script got greenlit. Like, this is a really, really bizarre and weird and kind of janky script.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's not, I mean, I don't think anybody would, you look at the cover, you look at the title, I don't think anybody would expect this to be a great film or anything, but like you said, a comfort viewing.
And for a relatively B movie, I guess you can kind of call it, or not, maybe not the greatest movie, there are still some big names in it. Of course, Bowie and Rosanna Arquette, but also Marley Matlin, who won Academy Award for Best Actress prior to this. She's the first deaf actress to ever win an Academy Award, I believe. I think she was in that new one, too, that cleaned up a while ago, Coda. Did you? I haven't seen that one yet, but it's on my list. Buck Henry's back, who had a pretty big career, and James Avery is in it as well, from Fresh Prince.
Right, yeah, he's the marriage guy.
Yeah.
He's going to be the one to marry them. That was that Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen
there
moment.
There he is.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And did you notice in the crowd who was in the movie?
Iman.
Yeah.
And?
I didn't notice. I read after who was sitting next to her. Because I had to, was that Iman? I knew it was her.
Yeah.
She's sitting next to Julian Lennon.
Yeah.
I didn't notice him because I guess it was like 2 seconds.
Right, yeah.
And brief. All I noticed was her.
Well, and Iman is the one where they say, so, okay, in this part, when Lucy is going to do this act where Bowie has bet that she can get out of the tank. Like, she's in a tank and she has to escape a bag that's, she's in handcuffs and they throw the key away and it's tied up and she's in a fish tank. And
she's never done it successfully on camera before. So it's like, this is her inevitable death.
Right, essentially.
Is what we're led to believe.
And she says before she does it, does anybody wish to see me fail? And Iman puts her hand up. That's great.
Well, and Iman, this must be very early in her and Bowie's relationship of even knowing each other, right? I mean, this is 90. This was shot in 1990.
90, right? Yeah.
I mean, he was just recently dating the girl from the Glass Spider tour,
right? Yeah.
So this has got it. Like, they're not.
He gets married like a year later or something from this, or 2 years later maybe.
But this must be like the genesis of their relationship, maybe three. Right? Like they probably aren't even dating yet. I don't think.
I don't know. I saw him being interviewed about the movie, but it was after the fact. It could have been after the release in America, even, which was 92. Mm-hmm. And he says he's getting married, but this could have been 92 when this interview was, because it still hadn't reached America yet. So, yeah. I wonder when it came out in Canada. I'm going to guess with the American release, but I couldn't find the info. The Wikipedia page is sparse.
Very sparse, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know what's funny too is James Avery, who played Uncle Phil in Fresh Prince, which was, I think he had just shot maybe a few, like it came out coincidentally with this, with the filming of this movie.
So this is his big breakthrough before Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
This is what got him noticed.
I was
8 seconds of screen time.
And after the movie, his name was Phil in this too. But they don't say his name. So I don't know if they just said, like, what's your name? Do you want to pick a name for this movie? And there's a Phil. And there's a Viv in this too, Vivian.
Oh, right. Yeah, the wife of his wife in Fresh Prince. Well, and that last scene that we're talking about too, the scene where the big climax where she's going to come out of the water or come out of the bag with the handcuffs in the water. That's when it's that scene where we're given the title of the movie. They talk about this big linguine incident, and it's not a big incident at all. It's just they're trying to buy time. The two guys with the Winton kid, what are their actual names in the movie? The two,
I don't even know.
The gamblers,
club owners,
the two antagonists that are making the bets with Bowie. The one guy's really trying to get, because she's not going to show up, right? Because she's pissed off because Bowie lied to her. He said that you're going to get caught they know that you did the heist. So you have to do this to not go to jail. Meanwhile, it was because Bowie lost the bet. That's
right.
He's just trying to save his ass and he's kind of throwing her under the bus. So she's potentially not going to show up. And while they're kind of buying time, expecting her not to show up.
They're telling jokes.
Yeah, they're telling that one guy's doing this really shitty song and dance and they're really losing the crowd. Okay, he's going to pull out the A material now. He tells the story how they bought the restaurant, I think.
Yeah.
They were eating linguine or something.
Right.
At some place. And I think that's how the story ends.
Yeah, that's
like, and it wasn't linguine, it was something else. Or it was like the
and
guys,
they're like, that's the title of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. The linguine incident. It's this shitty story that the two antagonists they're trying to buy time and they're losing the crowd and they talk about this one time they had linguine. And that's like the name of the movie. I remember going, because I was wondering, like, when's the spaghetti showing up? Like, because the cover on Wikipedia, there's a lot of covers for this movie.
Oh, tons,
But the cover on Wikipedia is Bowie screaming, coming out of this big thing of spaghetti, and it's just like this nuts cover with all kinds of spaghetti. I'm going, that's why it's called the Linguini Incident. I thought that was the best part of the film. I went, well, that's brilliant, because that's just so stupid and so nuts.
It's very fitting.
Like, I can you think of another movie with such a misleading, stupid, inconsequential title? I mean, I just...
And one that, like, is as subtle as that, too. You know, like, sometimes there'll be, like, a red herring type title. this one wasn't. It was just like they picked the most insignificant part of the movie.
Well, that's, yeah, I remember like when I typed, that was one of the only few notes I had. I went, well, it was more of like a red herring title, but it's not really a red herring because it's not duping you. It's just the stupid title.
I mean, Shag-O-Rama would dupe you. You'd think like, okay, this is going to be an X-rated film, mm-hmm. or there's going to be a lot of nudity and sex scenes.
And it would dupe you too, because at the start, it does appear to be heading in that direction with the whole love triangle and who's going to get to be with Bowie. Is it going to be I can't remember their names, Lucy and
Viv,
which one's it going to be?
So it's not a very serious movie. It's the type of movie where it's like that couldn't happen but they don't care. Like, for example, mm-hmm. when Vivian robs the place, she's got like this very see-through mask on. Like, it's not even a mask, it's one of those like, you, it's an old-fashioned like
fishnet
type thing, and she's been to the to the restaurant like every day.
They call her by name.
They call her by name, I think. Or no, they don't, but they're like, make sure not to. But it's like, okay, she wouldn't get away with it. Not only that, but her lingerie business takes off because of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then we know who just pulled his arm robbery.
Well, the restaurant takes off because of it, too.
The restaurant, too. Yeah, yeah. They said, if we knew who did it, we would pay them. And that's how, yeah, that we would pay them to rob the rest of our restaurants for the publicity. It's not a very serious movie. And it, like, they don't care that they wouldn't. Like, it's the worst heist ever, too. It's like, okay, we got this big plan. You're going to come in and hold with a gun and say, give me your money, and that's kind of it. When I heard that it was a heist movie, I was kind of expecting a bit more than that. I thought, like, you know, so if you were to read like the short synopsis without spoilers, it would be Lucy, Rosanna Arquette, and Monty, David Bowie, plan to rob the club that they work at. Can blah blah blah. It's like, you know, and
yeah. Well, what was it instead?
That sounds
he
good.
Wants to be tied down, she wants to be tied up. Yeah. But it's not what you think.
Yeah, that's definitely not what we think.
That
actually works too. That's brilliant.
It's a crazy movie, really. And my favorite scene is when Bowie reveals that he has the gun. It sounded like you know the sound that Ray makes in the Trailer Park Boys when he gets caught for faking his disability.
So there's this guy who, yeah, he's on fake disability,
and then he gets caught. He's making, it's from the great Canadian show Trailer Park Boys. He gets caught making like a porno DVD or something, and when the tapes get confiscated, they figure out that he's not in his. There he is standing. He doesn't need the wheelchair. He's faking the government, but he's too drunk when the cops show up to arrest him for it. So he fucks up and forgets to stay in character. And he stands up and his son goes, "Dad, your legs must be killing you." And he's been standing for, 5 seconds at this point? And he just lets out a, "Ah!" And yeah. That's the sound Bowie makes when he rips the gun off. I guess it's because his chest hair has got ripped off because...
Bowie doesn't have chest hair, though. That's what I don't get.
Why was that? Like, that caught me off guard. That was like a jump scare. It was just like the movie was going along just fine. And then all of a sudden, he just pulls this gun out of his chest and lets out this Tarzan roar.
Well, not only that, but...
Why?
Not only that, but he thought he had to be discreet enough to tape this gun to his body. But then when he's out in the middle of a park or something... He announces to the world that he's ripping this concealed weapon out, like, and pulls it out and waves it in the air.
That was crazy. I just, why was that in the movie? I have no idea.
It was weird.
But that, you know what, like, if you're going to find any redeeming qualities in this movie, I think those are going to be it. It's for its ridiculousness.
Yeah.
Which is maybe big-braining your way into saying this shitty movie is actually good. But, I mean, if you're going to find value in this movie, that's what it's going to be. It's in its ridiculousness, at least to me. I mean, I don't know what else you'd watch this movie and think is good about it other than that. Like, what else is good about it? Like
the atmosphere is kind of fun. It's a very specific 80s cluttercore aesthetic where the apartment's, like, there's shit everywhere. There's mm-hmm. books stacked up against the wall, and there's, like... The kind of, like, that would drive me absolutely insane.
Well, like, in the apartment,
yeah.
There's no, you know, they're going to go discuss who gets to sleep with Bowie. And they go to the other room. There is no other room. They give him a pair of headphones to put over his head instead.
And there's this big clump of hair stuck to them. Like, basically, like, the room, there isn't an inch that doesn't have something in it. It's it's this very kind of specific aesthetic that I think was maybe popular at the time. The club that they're in is kind of cool. It's a bit more upscale than the grimy apartment. It kind of looks like the place Tony Montana would hang out in.
Is that a Christmas tree? Does this movie take place at Christmas, or is that tree just there because they live in a crazy apartment?
Probably, yeah.
Because it is cold. I know, so you can see people's breath in this movie and stuff. Even in the club, I think I seem to remember.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it just, you know, it strikes me just cold New York. You know, that's what the atmosphere. You know, chilling.
It's a bit. Does it feel a bit dated to you though? For 1990. Well, okay.
By today's standards, definitely. Yeah.
So here's something. When I was thinking, like, this doesn't seem like it doesn't make you laugh. Like, I couldn't tell if I was laughing at it or with it because the comedy wasn't as of the times, maybe, and it's still a bit farther away from this, but this is closer to American Pie than it is to The Hunger and Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. So, yeah, like, if you think of it that way, it's like, it feels like maybe that's, like, it doesn't feel like the halfway point. It feels like an early 80s movie or a late 70s movie even. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I was, like, saying it earlier. This seemed more like an 80s thing than a 90s thing anyway. Right. Yeah.
But, like, in terms of style, and not necessarily, like, the aesthetic, but just in terms of, like, the style of comedy, I guess, where they're not, it's not that kind of, like, where, you know, I find a lot of modern comedies are, like, the bro comedy that started with a movie like American Pie or Old School a few years later. They still kind of, like, to this day, comedies kind of have this formula where it starts, like, hard and heavy with the jokes and the making fun of each other and the hilarious things. Mm-hmm. Is where this one, the comedy is a lot more, I don't know, it's, like, slapsticky almost. There's that scene at the beginning of the movie in the restaurant where they're, like, I don't even know what the hell. I've never seen a scene like this before where the two club owners are in the kitchen and people are eating these weird looking breadsticks and dipping them in things. And, like, I don't even know what they're doing. Yeah. It's like song and dance to make people laugh as opposed to a funny, like, one liner or something.
Well, the crowd is very much of a slapstick era. Yeah. Like, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. Even like Three Stooges, like, type of, like, you know, the crowd at the bar that we were just watching, it's on the TV here. Oh, here's the gun scene. The cotton candy to it.
Are they like Coney Island or something? There's a this seems more of like, when was the Warriors? A lot before this. It seems more like that era as opposed to a 90s movie, I guess. But yeah, to be fair, it was shot in 90, so
this couldn't have had a big budget.
Probably not. Let's
that actually show up in the Wikipedia page?
I'm not sure,
because there's not much on this movie.
Bowie looks really cool in this movie, though. He looks, like, cool now. Like, he would look super cool now. He's kind of got the big messy hair all the time, and he's in, like, really cool outfits. Like, his pea coat is really neat, and
he's kind of he's a normal guy almost. For, I mean, not that this movie's normal or the things he does is normal, but just in terms of, like, his occupation and he just kind of looks like a regular guy almost for once. Because every other movie that we've done, you know, he's a vampire, or he's an alien, or what else has he been? A gigolo. So yeah, he's all these crazy scenes. What was that other movie he was in with the Monty Python guys? He's in it for like a second. Every movie he's been in, it's something a little less normal. He's just a guy now. He's a regular guy. He's a bartender, you know.
The one thing where, like, I was thinking, like, he's pretty good in the movie. He's not great. He's not bad by any means. But maybe where, like, he's always gonna have this, oh, that's David Bowie in a movie. And I think where it maybe hurts him a little bit in this one is they're all American, and he's the only Englishman in the movie. He's the only person from England. So he's already got that distinction of you're different. They're all talking in American accents. He comes in British. So he sticks out for that reason, and he's also David Bowie.
So that makes the whole fact that he's English, like, it's Bowie. Like,
right. Yeah.
if he was able, because maybe this is where you could make the argument that he's not the greatest actor in the world. I mean, he can act and he can perform, but you think of like Idris Elba or Dominic West, these guys that were in The Wire, you know, they pull off Baltimore accents.
And they're English.
They're Englishmen. Yeah. They have thick, thick English accents. But we can't really do... I don't know if they...
Well, should we cover Firewalk with Me? That might be our next episode.
I don't know what that even is.
David Lynch movie that he's in, the Twin Peaks prequel.
What I've seen that this got compared to Twin Peaks in one of the... Was it in Nick Pegg's book, maybe, that I read?
Why the hell would
Or was it... No, was it a Guardian article?
Oh,
they said this movie was trying to copy some of the aesthetics from that. I don't know.
No. They weren't. I mean, Twin Peaks, it's a small town in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. This is New York, yeah.
I don't necessarily maybe think they were referencing that. I would have to check what they were actually getting at.
I don't know.
The Houdini stuff, maybe?
Maybe the fact that Bowie's in it and it's the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bowie's not really in Twin Peaks. He has a cameo, but yeah. Yeah, it's all right. As a whole, this movie's just all right, I would say. Is it something you'd recommend?
No.
I don't even know if I would recommend it to like the biggest of Bowie fans. Like you gotta, you know.
Well, even then it wouldn't be because I think this will reach out to this sensibility of yours that you, or it has sensibilities that you would appreciate. You'd just be like, well, you have to see it for the sake of it because it's Bowie.
Yeah.
Like that, there's nothing really to it that I would think you have to see it for this reason. No, it would just be because somebody likes David Bowie. And have you heard of it? Oh, well, you think you're a big Bowie fan? Well, that would be the reason, right?
Yeah. Like nothing outside of it's that. It's the pissing contest thing.
Yeah.
That meme with the iceberg where it's got like Ziggy, Aladdin Sane, Thunderbolt, maybe even Black Star is above the surface. And then below it, it's like, you know, Black Tie, White Noise, Tin Machine. And then like the very bottom would be the Linguini incident. Have you seen this?
Yeah, if you're planning on being some kind of David Bowie gatekeeper, maybe.
Yeah.
You need to see it. I don't know, but
how about that scene where we're watching it right now, where he takes that dead chicken and starts because during the robbery it might not have happened because the friend Vivian, she got like a flat tire on the bike on the way there, so they think she's not going to show up, and Monty's pissed off, so he goes into the kitchen and just takes.
Beats his chicken. Is that some kind of innuendo?
Well, maybe. I'm going to go beat my chicken in the back room. And so he's got this raw chicken in his hand, and then he's just whacking the wall with it. And then Lucy comes in, and they start kissing. And he's got, like talk about salmonella.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Like, when I wash my hands when I touch raw meat.
Sometimes your finger grazes it after you've washed your hands. Ah, I got to wash my hands all over again. He doesn't give a shit about that.
No. All he needs to get is green card.
Yeah,
it's the outfits.
It's a movie.
Yeah, I saw Bowie say, you know, I'm always cast as aliens and stuff, and in this one they even managed to put me in a shiny silver outfit. Like they're the outfits that they wear. It's like they're a space club or something, based on the outfits that the workers at this club have to wear. They're very shiny silver. It's a weird club. Like there's neon green lights, and it looks like there's like an aquarium surrounding. It's actually really cool.
Well, and the money club. When they're robbing the place, it's in some kind of see through, like it's like a fish tank with no water in it.
It's just out in the open and, for everybody to see how much money they've raked.
Yeah, and
in
then
today.
When they rob it, they don't get all the money. You can clearly see there's thousands more, and they just don't. Vivian doesn't care.
They filled up like a donut
bag. She does it twice.
Yeah, and they fill up like a donut bag with it. Like it's the tiniest little paper bag, like a lunch bag. Mm. And Marley Matlin, the worker that does the grabbing the money, she's so happy while she's doing it. She's like, "Oh, this is fun. We're getting robbed." Like, I can't wait to tell everybody about this. Yeah.
Crazy movie. Like I said, and that's the beauty of the movie. It's just you never know where what kind of turn it's going to take. It's very unpredictable. I suppose that if you're listening to this,
Abe Lincoln's in this movie. Did you see that?
No.
I'm going to rewind it just for you to see it. Yeah, this is just going to be a... we're just going to watch it and add live commentary.
Hey, now. And there's Julian Lennon. I can see him now.
Oh, he's... Well, yeah, we're not there yet, but it's... the copy I have has a skip ahead and it shows a thumbnail. There's Abraham Lincoln. But look at, like... They're not very concerned about being held at gunpoint. They she's holding the gun up to their face, and they're kind of laughing at her. They're like, "Oh, that's cute."
They're not gonna listen to her, but then they see.
There's Abe Lincoln. There's two.
Oh,
Abe Lincolns.
Yeah,
there's two Abe Lincolns in the crowd.
That's what I mean. Like, this bar is crazy. Like, yeah. The people that are hanging out in this bar, they're dressed like Abe Lincoln. It's just.
They keep the money in a glass aquarium at the front of the building. Like, imagine walking into a restaurant and they just have all the money in plain sight at the door, basically. Like, right at the door.
And it apparently worked because the robber didn't notice it.
Yeah. Where is it? Show me where the money is. Where do you keep the money? And, like, they just got robbed and they're excited about it. They're laughing. They're like, that was fun. Do it again. Do it again. And the great escape is she... Yeah, she's leaving the club now, and her bike's gone, and she's just kind of standing there. I mean, if I robbed a place, that would make a beeline for anywhere, but the front of the building, waiting for the cops to show up. And then they dance around, and Bowie's playing a guitar, which came out of nowhere, and they're drinking, and they're just dancing around with a lot more money than was in the bag that they got. They put, like, basically, like, a couple hundred bucks in a bag, but now they're throwing it around like a rap video.
This is a crazy movie. If you can somehow find it, maybe watch it.
Maybe. Or just listen to this episode and it does the trick.
Yeah. What are we doing next?
Next will be Tin Machine 2.
Tin Machine 2.
Yeah.
An album. Nice. I kind of want to do an album again. Tour movie. Want to play an album.
Yeah. We won't be doing any more movies, unfortunately. You know, I think it would be fun to rank, or not rank, because
rank the movies?
Yeah. Or maybe just do like top 10 Bowie acting performances or something, where we do some honorable mentions maybe, but then we can include things like Elephant Man.
Yeah, Elephant Man would be like one.
Or even like Last Temptation of Christ, like we could... include that because it's not like the top movies he starred in. Like, he has a, you know, he plays Pontius Pilate in that and he's got a smaller role, or he plays Nikola Tesla in The Prestige. Like,
he's like small role in Absolute Beginners, like not enough to warrant an episode,
right? But we can maybe like touch on it a bit, but then maybe do like a top 10. Like, maybe this is like once we're done Black Star, when we're ranking everything from his hairstyles to his albums, we'll do
album cover rankings.
That'll be fun.
That has to happen, I would say. I will purposely put Aladdin Sane lower just because I'm sick of it.
So looking at him, how old do you think he is? Well, you kind of have an idea.
I'll just say 40.
He's 44 in this movie. He looks like 30. He looks incredible. Yeah. He looks really, really good. Yeah.
I mean, he looks no different than he did in like, I don't know, like the Lodger era.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know that what's that video of him walking up and down the escalator?
Oh, like from Ricochet, the documentary?
Yeah, and yeah. It's...
he's in the Far East somewhere, and yeah.
That, to me, he looks no different.
Just the hair is lighter. Yeah.
Because, yeah, he's got, like, it's more like bleach blonde, right, and that. But it's the same length.
That was the tail end of
Serious Moonlight. And his skin... He doesn't have any more or less wrinkles in either. Like that, and that's what, a 7 year difference or 6 years, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it's not that crazy, but I mean, he didn't really age much from Lodger to here.
Yeah.
Well, and Lodger's even before that. That's 79.
Yeah.
I guess even low if you see the pictures of him in that. Yeah, that whole era, like even like, yeah, when he was doing the live stuff in 78, he doesn't really look any different. Like any different. I mean, maybe a couple years older. He maybe looks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I read somewhere that, now I I might be wrong, I might be right, that his company, ISO Records, put some money into this movie.
When I was glossing over Nick Pegg's very small section in his book on this movie.
Was that this one?
Yeah. He said initially. But then I don't know if there's any like follow-up on what that meant when he said initially.
Right.
Did that mean they backed out?
Maybe, or maybe they were like, they put some money in at the beginning
and then went let's not do the sunken cost fallacy. Let's just get the fuck out while we can.
This was like, this era is the biggest black hole for me. Like, this was the first time I've seen this movie.
No, yeah, definitely the first time I've seen this. I didn't really know about it until you were like, we're going to do the Linguini incident. I was like, what are we doing? What's that?
Well, I had a friend who was telling me about it years ago, and I just saw the cover, and I thought, like, yeah, I'm going to have to see this one day. And, I mean, it's kind of easy to put something like this off for a while. Mm-hmm. When there's, it's kind of like, this is not talked about, this movie. It's kind of
No, I mean, you know, you were always immersed in Bowie lore a little bit more than me, so I think this was more on your radar, but, like, you know, I'm somebody, like, way more than the casual Bowie fan, I would hear of things, right? I'd never saw this come up, ever. I mean, it was like, it just never came up. It was through you, actually. I had to have somebody that was into Bowie as much as you for me to know what the hell this even was. I mean, I had no idea what this movie was.
And I hadn't even seen it, so.
Yeah. It doesn't come up at all, no.
You know what's funny is we talked about, at the end of our movie episodes, we kind of go, will you watch this again? And I was thinking about, I'm pretty sure when we watched The Man Who Fell to Earth, I said I might not watch it again, or maybe like one more time in my life. But I think maybe after watching this movie, I've been craving going back to The Man Who Fell to Earth, and I might watch it again shortly. It's something about, I love the fact that he was an alien who came to our planet, and in no time, our society and the American dream ruined him.
Yeah,
it's just like, I feel like I want to see it again. It's gonna be one of those things where I'm gonna have a Man Who Fell to Earth podcast by the time it's like, I love this movie so much, and we're gonna have an episode on each scene or something. I've been craving watching that again.
It's like, that is a genuinely good movie. That's not the Bowie bias or anything either. Like, that's a good movie.
Right. Yeah. And,
you know, like, a lot of these movies we're doing, let's face it, we're doing it because Bowie's in it. But The Man Who Fell to Earth on its own, I mean, there's movie podcasts that I'm sure have talked about that movie.
Yeah.
Probably. Whereas, like, there's movie podcasts that stay away from not that The Hunger was a bad movie, but that's more of like, it's because Bowie's in it.
Right.
Man Who Fell to Earth is its own thing, kind of. It's a great film.
Yeah. Well, The Hunger was, I mean, the Mike Munzer, who was on our show, his podcast covered it but they're very, very in depth.
Yeah.
Like, they cover everything.
Yeah.
And it was part of their Vampires season, which went on for like a year or something.
So, like, that's what it takes for that movie like that.
Right.
A vampire season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we should rank his, or we should do a top 10 Bowie performances. This one probably wouldn't make it. I can't see. Well, there isn't much quantity, so it could sneak in.
Well, yeah, it'd be like, it's top 10, but it's like there's 13 things.
Right.
Like ranking top 10 songs on hours.
Yeah.
It made the list. It's.
Yeah, okay. I think that's it. We're running out of steam on this one. That's the Linguini incident. I kind of want Linguini now. I've got Linguini.
I could go
for some linguine. I love
pasta. Well, the Chinese food place that I go to, I keep getting the rice as my non-meat thing instead of that. I've been putting off noodles for a while, so yeah, I'm going to eat some noodles. That was my big revelation after this movie. I haven't had noodles in a few weeks.
It might not grab you, this movie, but it'll make you want to eat pasta. The Linguini incident. I'm Jesse.
I'm John.
Thanks for listening.